This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. When we think about climate change, we often think in terms of statistics, studies, and measurements, things like melting glaciers and dwindling wildlife populations and the numbers behind mass human migration. It's a grim reality. But Grist Magazine, one of the leading climate solutions media outlets in the nation, asks us to imagine a future inspired by contemporary climate-related fiction. Grist has partnered with Yes Magazine in its new project, and here to discuss it on today's show is my colleague, Brianna Draxler.
I am Brianna Draxler, senior editor at Yes Magazine, filling in on Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. I'm joined today by Tori Stevens, the climate fiction creative manager at Grist Magazine, a nonprofit independent media organization dedicated to telling stories of climate solutions and a just future. There he leads an annual writing contest called Imagine 2200, Climate Fiction for Future Ancestors, which is what we're here to talk about today. Welcome to the program, Tori.
Thanks for having me.
So the publications that you and I both work for, Grist and Yes, are known for their journalism. Our stories tell deeply reported narratives about climate justice in our world today. So how does fiction fit into this?
I would say that fiction fits in because so many people enjoy getting their orientation from fiction. They enjoy discussions that are rich and enlightening, but don't have to do with the everyday news and things that we're viewing from day to day. So many people have responded to us and said, you know, I love the reporting that Grist does, but I really do also like, I'm a big fiction reader, and I'm so happy that Grist has something that is about just futures, that is about the climate, that has intersectional characters. And we also hear this from writers as well. That's the other side of this, because this is a writing initiative. It's a writing contest that people submit stories to. So many people have said, I'm so glad that I found this prompt, the prompt that we put out to the world that is not dystopian, doesn't focus on, you know, how our world could be if we get this wrong, but instead focuses on getting to that clean, green, and just world that they also want.
Absolutely. That climate fiction historically has been very dystopian in my experience, in my reading. So how do you counter that, or how do you maybe incorporate that into what the climate fiction looks like at Grist?
Yeah, we just call for it, you know, so we don't even entertain the dystopian stories. I also want to just be clear that I think that dystopian stories serve a great purpose to society. I think that they show the world that we don't want to live in. And I think that's something we need. We need those sort of stories. Some of my favorite, you know, films and stories are dystopian, but we feel like there's not enough hopeful stories out there. So we called for hopeful stories. So if you submit a story to Imagine 2200, when our call for submissions is open, I'm sorry, but we won't take a story that is dystopian. We won't take a story that doesn't include justice, that doesn't have intersectional characters, that is, you know, might even have like some eco-fascist ideas in there embedded that folks don't even realize that, you know, they're adding to the storyline. So we have a rubric and we have reviewers who are looking for certain things, and we just don't accept them. Even if they're a great story, we might think it's a great story, but it's just not an Imagine 2200 story.
So what can this kind of climate fiction, this particular brand of climate fiction, offer readers in terms of imagining solutions?
Yeah, we see all sorts of solutions from amoeba eating plastic, you know, in the stories, we see things like that. We see bioluminescence harnessed to create light on for street lamps and whatnot. It runs the gamut from fantastical, which we're okay with, as long as the discussion is helping, as long as the discussion is focused on the climate and people can kind of have a rich discussion about the climate, we don't mind that it can delve into fantasy or magical realism, but we do want to have some, you know, real world climate solutions embedded in our stories, and we do. And so it runs the gamut, and like, it doesn't always have to be like a technological or scientific solution. It can also be how we get along with each other, how we work with our neighbor, how we live in community with each other, how we changed a policy or, like, you know, added some social justice to an area of life that is just not there right now, or is being pushed for by others, but is not been adopted by society. So things like the land back movement you'll see show up in stories, things like reparations hasn't shown up in stories that have been published, but we see these. The thing I have to explain is that we get, over the last 3 years, we've gotten 3,000 stories. And so right now, due to budget concerns and just, you know, how much it costs for us to publish a story, we've only published 12 a year. So there's this part of the initiative that is advocating and helping people realize their visions and dreams through writing. And we see a lot of those. So, you know, I've seen reparations and other social justice causes show up. They just haven't ended up being the ones that are the best stories that we're going to publish. But they're so good. They're so close. And like, we really hope that those folks work with those stories and, you know, they do get to market and do get out there. And maybe it was just a great exercise for that particular person to kind of work through that as well. I see value in that for sure.
So why is it so important for us to imagine or dream or envision this better future? You know, I think some people would say it's just another form of having your head in the clouds versus doing the actual work on the ground today.
Yeah, I'll go. There's a few points I could like add to this one is, you know, the discussion piece, right? So I think like just having a rich discussion about what does hope look like? What does a decolonized future look like? You know, you can ask those questions, but like a writer will build that full world out in a different way than a discussion will. And then you could have a discussion about it as well. So then it like lives on beyond just the story value. And so there's that. There's the other side of this, which is like, I believe it's helpful to have depictions of the world we want, right? Like, I think that, you know, I think your tagline is, I forget the tagline, but there's something about the another world is possible, which is also like a socialist kind of tagline. I think that is like encapsulates a lot of what we're trying to do here. You know, we're trying to show that another world is possible. The world we live in right now is very extractive. It is, you know, there's folks that are on the margins because of that extraction, because of that scarcity. And so we're trying to show a world of abundance, where the characters are the folks that have been marginalized. And instead, those folks are depicted in hero terms and kind of, you know, owning the world and in bringing forth a world that others want to live by. And the last piece I'll say is that there's real knowledge that folks have that have been pushed to the margins that isn't being depicted in story. And so, you know, our call asks and calls for people from all over the globe, you know, folks that are on the front lines to submit stories around like, what does your world look like if it was green, clean, and just? And that's not going to look the same if you ask someone from India or even like another part of India, right? So then you bring that to like extrapolate that and bring it all the way out to like, you know, from the West to the East to India. You know, there's just so many different perspectives on what a clean, green, and just world looks like. And I think by having that sort of conversation, you get all these perspectives of what that could look like. And so then I am informed now of things I didn't even like think of as being beautiful, rich worlds. And I think that has like serious value. And right now, there's not enough of that, in my opinion, going on.
So I'm curious with this title, Imagine 2200, how did you land on the year 2200? Is there a particular significance or how did that come to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's like two things. One is that we wanted to pick a time period that's so far off that you can dream big and no one can tell you that like that's not going to be achieved by that time because we all just don't know, right? And then the other piece is like that, you know, around what Indigenous folks have been, you know, telling each other for years is that you should be a good steward of the earth, not just for, you know, your sake and your own individual sake, but for the sake of your ancestors. And I believe they look out to 7 or 8 generations out, depending on the Indigenous tribe or society you'd ask. And so we saw that as like, it's like so different than what Western life does. Like I used to be in the global political kind of space, mainly through college, and like international relations was something that I cared about deeply. And like, I always, when the Chinese were developing their 5-year plans and America couldn't pass a budget for 6 months, it was like that kind of, I'm not saying like the Chinese or the Indigenous folks, but like just that how timeframes of looking into the future is so different in different societies. And so 5 years is nothing close to like 8 generations. But if you, again, extrapolate that out, I think there's deep wisdom in kind of looking and caring for future societies and planning that far ahead.
You ask the writers to keep these future ancestors in mind. Is that sort of the target audience is the future ancestors?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think we get often. I think it's for both. It's for us now and for the future ancestors. I guess if I had to pick and say the target audience is for us today. And so like the thing that you'll get from this exercise, these stories, is you'll get, again, these perspectives of what the future could look like from a diverse group of folks. And I think there's value in that. And the thing that we've learned is that this kind of like thinking doesn't have to stick to like storytelling. Like I think, so when we created this project, Imagine 2200, it took us about 1.5 years to kind of develop like what we wanted. We knew that we wanted climate fiction, but we didn't know what kind of climate fiction. So I brought together a whole bunch of leaders across the solutions and justice, climate solutions and justice space, to discuss what kind of climate fiction should we have. And we used a visioning technique or visioning, a collective visioning process, a guided one, to think about the future, just as we do with Imagine 2200. And everybody was able to kind of view and see other people's dreams in real time. And it was beautiful. And like, it was also helpful. And what I gained from that experience was you could do this in policy. You could do this, like this visioning technique, to kind of like build out or explore a new policy, a campaign, you know, an activist strategy. I think what it does, and you could call it like, oh God, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, blue skying, like, you know how when people do these like blue sky exercises, but the thing that we did was we added a lot of different facilitation kind of techniques to kind of build out visioning so that it, like, there was a timeline, we had milestones built into the timeline that we had on our whiteboard, this amazing tool Miro we used, which has an infinite whiteboard. And we put people on a quest, a visioning quest, and they had to mark milestones in between the present day, which at the time was 2021, and 2200. And the milestones were, you know, reparations were, you know, I'm just giving examples of like things that I saw, reparations given to Black and Brown people who were descendants of slaves. United States, and it had a timestamp, so 2070 or something like that. You know, I'm just making this up right now, but there was all these beautiful milestones that people generated. And at the end, I was able to view those milestones. And what I found was a lot of people, like, climate was not the first issue for many people, you know, or it was an intersectional issue for many people. They saw it like, intertwined with where they wanted a clean, green, and just future to be. And so, yeah, I'm a huge advocate now for like visioning as a way to supercharge your creative project, or even things like policy or politics or campaigning. or even like tech.
Absolutely. It seems like a really powerful way to go from sort of harebrained idea into tangible milestones to get from here to there. And I'm wondering how you think about that with the story competition. How do we get from here, 2024, to 2200 to translate these visions into reality?
Yeah, that's one question that I'm going to do this in a different way. I think that we need more stories to kind of play with the perspectives. And, you know, the thing that I noticed with visioning is that I was able to take what we called in the visioning process, dream seeds. So every time someone put something on the board, we called it a dream seed. You know, that's how we get to this clean, green, and just world. And so the thing I like about these stories and the reason I advocate for climate storytelling and climate fiction is I think we need a million more flowers to bloom or stories to bloom, because there's a narrative arc that needs to change in the United States that we can't get out of this crisis to we can get out of this crisis. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be abundant. And yes, there will be some, like, there's already some things baked in. I'm not going to, like, you know, that's just the reality that we're going to be living in, but it doesn't have to end in the apocalypse. It can end with us having better life for, you know, from the justice side of things to the practical technology that's going to make our world clean, green, and just. So, yeah, I think, like, I'm not sure. I don't think it's one story that's going to make this work. I think it's many different stories and perspectives, and somewhere in that, like, soup of stories, we'll find a way out.
It's exciting to imagine living in that world. I hope we get to experience it, and I hope that we can all enjoy some glimmers of these many stories, which we'll be sharing on Yes as well, some of our favorites. I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. We've been speaking with Tori Stevens, Climate Fiction Creative Manager at Grist.
Thanks so much.
I'm Brianna Draxler, filling in for Sonali, and this is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali.
Thanks, Brianna. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.